Today, we hear about a crime that often does not come to light for decades. It's sexual assault. It's something that violates sacred family bonds. It's fertility fraud. A man from Normal found out he had dozens of half-brothers and sisters he knew nothing about, nearly 100 in all. Today's show in its entirety is the WGLT interview with him. Kurt Richardson was doing genealogical research on Ancestry.com. He had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, that's called Still's disease. He was curious where his condition came from and about potential other genetic medical issues. So in addition to the work on his family tree, he decided to do a DNA kit. In this conversation with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker, we start when Richardson got his results in April of 2021.
When you go through this DNA testing, you can consent to seeing people who you match, and that's part of the fun of that. You may have a long-lost cousin or something like that that you didn't know about. I didn't think too much of not recognizing the names.
What's a match? How close is the... does it have to be a match? A cousin, a descendant, a sibling? What constitutes a match?
It depends on the company, but they look at how much DNA do two people have in common. And so Ancestry.com, close family relationship is before first cousin, and then usually a sibling, or at least a half sibling.
And you had a lot of close...
I had a lot of those, but a lot of names that I didn't recognize. I didn't know at the time what close family meant. And there's a messaging app component to Ancestry.com. And if you are a match with somebody, you can contact and reach out to them. And I got a message, said, hey, sorry to keep bothering you. Let me know if you want me to stop contacting you. I just want to make sure you're okay. Here's my personal cell phone number, and call me anytime if you need to talk.
Well, that's unlooked for.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was, strange to me. My first thought was, this is somebody just, I don't know who has access to this messaging app, if it's somebody just trying to scam me or something like that. But I then looked at the other messages, and I had a lot of similar ones like that. Several people reached out, hey, same thing happened to me a year ago. Here's my personal cell phone number. I know you probably have a lot of questions.
And you're thinking, what?
I'm thinking, what is this all about? One of the messages said, you may want to Google a particular name. And there was a lot of different stories out there regarding a fertility doctor. My head spinning at that point. This doctor had been accused and had ultimately been convicted of consumer fraud violation, basically, for misrepresenting himself to the attorney general in the state that he was in. What he had done and was accused of doing was using his own reproductive material rather than a donor to inseminate his patients.
What did you do?
I reached out to my parents and I told them everything that, I had discovered. My parents told me they did see a fertility specialist and had trusted them, and my mother was supposed to be fertilized by my father. It was an insemination. In vitro wasn't as common back then. And it was at that point, Charlie, that not only myself, but my parents, for the first time ever, realized what had happened.
How did you and your family process it when it became clear that that was what had happened?
It was extremely difficult. So, we followed up. Is this actually the case? Is there some sort of mix-up or something like that? When we got confirmation that my dad was not my biological father, that confirmed our worst nightmare. It's difficult. Processing this is different for everybody. And there were a lot of things to process. So not only the violation that happened to my parents, but then also the realization that results from that, that my father, that, I've known my entire life and my parents thought was my biological father, I thought was my biological father, was not my biological father. And then translating that to the rest of my family, my dad's side, not being biologically related to them. And
big family?
Yeah, pretty big family. So
lots of people then.
Lots of people, very close, realizing that those fears, all those, that I was no longer biologically related to the people I thought were my uncles and my cousins and aunts, it's extremely tough. And I think what's even worse, Charlie, is that going back to the connections on Ancestry, what added to this is the fact that it wasn't just one time that the doctor had done this. I had a lot of half-siblings, and that this had happened. To date, I have 95, at least, 95 plus, and that this had occurred over a period of years and years and years. It's just hard to describe all the motions that go through, that I went through, that I'm still going through, that my parents went through and are still going through, and trying to process all that together. Because not only is the reality that you thought, you know, was the case not the truth, but then you're faced with this new reality.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Kurt Richardson, who found out well into adulthood that he was a victim of fertility fraud. Has it shifted family dynamics, or are you leaning on each other to help get through this?
We are definitely a very close family, and so leaning on each other, my parents, and I do have a brother that I grew up with, a half-brother, that, you know, my parents and my brother and I have always been very close, so that really hasn't changed. I can't say it wasn't awkward at first. You know, after you have these very tough conversations and realization, there was some awkwardness at first, but leaning onto each other, into each other, and has certainly helped. You know, my parents are very, very solid and could lean on each other for support, and I could have conversations with them as well. I'm blessed. I'm blessed with great parents who have done nothing but try to support me through this whole situation.
What did this cause you to think about in terms of families of genetics and families of choice?
That's certainly one of the things I've thought about. And like I said, there's a whole list of all kinds of thoughts and emotions that go through, and, you know, different experiences and different thoughts and emotions for my parents and for me and for the other siblings involved. But part of the challenge, I think, with somebody who discovers something like this, whether they knew they were supposed to be donor conceived and there was fraud involved, which is most of the time what this situation is. Somebody goes in for a fertility treatment and I find out that the doctor has committed fraud and used his own reproductive material rather than the donor that he told the mother that he was going to use.
You're saying most of the time. How common is this?
Unfortunately, it's very common. So to my knowledge, this has occurred in several states: Arizona, Colorado, California, Florida, New York, Ohio, more recently Illinois that I'm aware of, all over, Texas. So we're not just talking about the doctor in my case, but we're talking about multiple doctors that have engaged in similar, if not the same, type of conduct.
Why? Why does that happen? Is it vanity on the part of the physician? Is it just what?
Yeah, that's the toughest question. It's especially tough for the children. Why did somebody choose to do this? Lie to their patient, to the mother, even though it's not discovered until more recent times, you know, when this occurred in the 70s and 80s a lot, the fertility industry was just starting. So is it because they were trying to increase, you know, their success rate? Is it because of vanity? Is it because of a God complex? Is it, you know, some sort of sexual deviation or something? There's all kinds of theories out there as far as why somebody does this. And you can drive yourself crazy if you try to figure that out, that question out. It's really hard. There's not really a good answer to that. I think it's just those doctors would have to answer those questions as far as why each of them chose to do something and violate the most sacred right of any patient, violate their patient's body in that way.
You're listening to Kurt Richardson, who's speaking with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker on Sound Ideas. Richardson discovered in his fourth decade that a fertility doctor committed fraud by substituting his sperm for that of the man Richardson always assumed was his biological father. The conversation continues with Richardson saying not every family who finds out something similar is as supportive as his.
It really just depends on the family dynamic, I think, and fortunately or unfortunately, everybody reacts differently. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong way to react. You know, some families are, I think there's a certain amount of shame that goes along with this. You know, finding out that, you know, you've been victimized in such a personal, intimate way. Sometimes they want to be very private about that. You know, children feel guilt by trying to make connections with other siblings or trying to find answers because at the same time, they don't want to hurt their parents, you know, who maybe, again, feel shame because of this or embarrassment. Unfortunately, there are some very tough situations where I'm aware of, you know, the children, the victims, you know, they're adults when they find out, having very tenuous, if not, you know, removed relationships with their family members. Their family members don't want to accept it. They don't want them speaking about it. So it causes a lot of internal conflict. It causes a lot of emotions, again, trying to balance, you know, should I ignore this? Should I just try to internalize it? Or should I try to find some of the answers for myself?
What has been the healthiest way for you to deal with it?
Well, for me, you know, it's really been a struggle. I won't say that I haven't had a lot of health issues as a result of this and distraction. But I feel like I'm at my best when I'm doing my job. I'm an attorney by profession, political science background, and so I do what I can do. I feel like not only do I need to help my parents find some sort of accountability, find some sort of justice, but then all the other siblings, you know, I've talked to a lot of siblings, a lot of victims who, unfortunately, the laws haven't even contemplated this type of conduct, let alone, you know, catch up to it. So,
and you're working on that?
And I'm working on that. One of the ways I cope is by trying to take some of that power back for victims, for the mothers who have been violated and feel like there's nothing they can do, to try to get some accountability against the doctors who have done this. And so writing laws to criminalize the conduct, writing laws to provide for a civil remedy, and trying to get those passed in various states and now at the federal level.
Does Illinois have such laws?
Illinois does not have a law. So when I found out, it wasn't too long after that I was connected with a law professor at Indiana University who had worked and studied a lot of fertility fraud and who had helped pass the first fertility fraud law over there in Indiana. So then I decided I was going to write a law in Illinois to be able to address this.
Last spring, you had State Senator Dave Kaler in the Peoria area introduce it. Where does it stand?
There's Senate Bill 4199. in Illinois that I am so thankful for Senator Kaler for working with me. When he heard about my story, he wanted to help and reached out to some other senators, our local ones here, and reached out to Senator Rose, who had grown up in my hometown. And so fortunately, I had some of those connections, and we were able to get that bill introduced, bipartisan support. And that's been the case with a lot of these bills in every state. I mentioned the states where this has happened. We've been going state by state and trying to get laws passed for people to understand and be educated about what this is.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Our guest is Kurt Richardson. We're talking about fertility fraud. What does your proposed law entail? What sort of remedies, what penalties would it create?
It has a criminal piece and also a civil cause of action. And so it creates the crime of fertility fraud. It does make it a felony. It also provides for civil remedies. So it does have a component for liquidated damages or for actual damages. It would allow for punitive damages.
How do you decide what actual damages are in a case like this, where somebody has grown to adulthood in a family? Certainly there's emotional damage, and that comes to punitive, but how do you decide actual damages?
That's a good question, and it probably depends on the specifics of each case. Certainly, you know, there's a violation of the mother as the patient. There's a physical component to that.
Could it qualify as sexual assault?
Absolutely, and that's part of what I've been advocating for as well. So in the case of my parents, I believe it was a sexual assault. Now, you know, criminal laws were different back then. They may not have been as expansive. So definitions were different, and certain things may not have been covered. So trying to go back and uncover what the potential criminal violations were, but then also correcting that. So again, with this new law, trying to make sure it's clear that this is criminal conduct, but then also creating those civil remedies. And the biggest piece here, too, is making it retroactive.
In a case where something is discovered years or decades later, what is an appropriate statute of limitations?
For a criminal case, you can't make a criminal law, a new criminal law, retroactive. That's not the case with a civil cause of action. The courts generally will say that a new civil cause of action is only prospective only unless there's an intent to make it retroactive, expressly expressed in the law. That's one of the pieces I added that's different from some of the other state laws.
Lawmakers might take a big gulp before they pass that one. Retroactivity is a tough precedent to set for in a lot of fields. Do you think that will fly?
I do. Just because of the unique nature of fertility fraud, you know, the fraud may have occurred years ago, and I would argue is still occurring, because had the victim not actually gone through a similar thing like a DNA test or something, they would have never discovered it. So there's an active concealment piece on the part of the doctor. They're not disclosing what had happened. And so there's a concept that tolls any sort of statute of limitations until the discovery is made. But being the fact that, you know, somebody is middle-aged or later in life and takes a DNA test and learns about this, I think there is a piece that needs to be included for retroactivity.
What about the federal level? What are you doing there?
We have a bill, House Resolution 8600, sponsored by Congresswoman Bice, Stephanie Bice out of Oklahoma, that is taking a similar approach. It has a jurisdictional hook, because to have a federal crime, you need to have it touch on interstate acts. The other unique thing that the federal bill will do as currently written is to make this crime a predicate offense under RICO. That could expand the criminal penalties. It also has a component which opens up some civil causes of action under federal law and allows also it to be investigated by federal agencies. And part of the problem and why there needs to be a federal bill is the fact that some of these state statutes do vary in how they are treating fertility fraud. So trying to find some sort of uniform crime or uniform cause of action is important to address. And
has this helped you, forced you to reassess who you are?
Yes. I'm not going to lie. That's a big piece. And again, whether you were supposed to be donor conceived or conceived by, you know, your father, when you learn of this, I think part of that the shock is the same, right? You've known something for almost your entire, your entire life that was untrue. And so you do question that. I think that's natural to question your identity. I think the question, the nature or nurture argument, I think that's part of it. And what I've come to realize is that who I am is based upon how I was raised and through my parents. And while, there may be genetic traits or similarities with others, it doesn't change who I am as a person.
That's Kurt Richardson, a victim of fertility fraud. A doctor used his own reproductive material to inseminate Richardson's mother instead of the intended use of material from her husband. Richardson will be in Washington, D.C. tomorrow to speak at a congressional hearing about his proposed law criminalizing fertility fraud. Richardson spoke with WGLT's Charlie Slanker.